This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acra.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the brand new edition of the WGXC Morning Show, retooled and laser-focused on important issues in our community. Today's issue is the fall local elections. It's Labor Day, and that's the traditional start of election season. And today we'll preview campaigns in Greene, Columbia, and Rensselaer counties, and also hear the latest news about election rules and polling locations, how local assembly persons and state senators voted in last week's special session in Albany, and more. Stay tuned for all you need to know about this fall's election season on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Stay tuned.
On air, in air, channel connection, and the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Help WGXC vibrate on and keep essential radio on your 90.7 FM frequency. And at WGXC.org, wavefarm.org/listen, there's many ways to tune in. You can use the TuneIn app. You can tune in on your phone, your computer, your tablet, or your transistor radio. Please consider making a sustaining support pledge. $5 monthly pledge, just 17 cents a day, will keep the radio vibrating on at 90.7 FM, keeping community voices on the air. Make a pledge today at wgxc.org/donate.
Wave Farm programs are made possible in part by the New York State Council on the Arts, with the support of the New York State Legislature, the National Endowment for the Arts, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, the Greene County Legislature through the County Initiative Program, administered in Greene County by CREATE, the Alexander and Marjorie Hoover Foundation, the T. Backer Fund, the Joseph Family Charitable Trust, and hundreds of other generous individual donors, including WGXC's sustaining supporters, who provide critical monthly support to Wave Farm's radio station, WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of the Rodney Shop in Catskill, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that, as expected, Governor Kathy Hochul, September 3rd, announced a $3.2 million project to revitalize the Coxsackie State Boat Launch and Riverside Park. The project will be the first state boat launch to be renewed under the Hudson Eagles Recreation Area. Quote, "The Upper Hudson River Estuary, a 60-mile stretch of the Hudson River from Albany to Kingston, is a globally significant ecological and recreational asset," unquote, Hochul said. Quote, "The Hudson Eagles Recreation Area offers the opportunity to create a destination unlike any other, a water-based linear park that will draw more people to the Hudson River and better connect communities to the waterfront and waterway travelers, starting with the village of Coxsackie," unquote. Hochul also announced the completion of $900,000 in improvements for the ferry landing fishing access site across the Hudson River in Stuyvesant. That site provides public access for fishing. The improvements in Coxsackie will include a new open-air pavilion, new trees, landscaping and seating, improved bike and pedestrian connections between the waterfront and downtown, new signage, and renovations to the basketball court. The project will also renovate and modernize the existing boat launch, add a new ADA-compliant kayak launch, and create additional space for transient boater tie-ups. State Senator Michelle Hinchey and Assemblymember Chris Tagg praised the project. Coxsackie Village Mayor Mark Evans said, quote, "We want to thank the state parks for working with us, allowing us to have input into the features and design. This upgrade will allow for more access and expanded use of the park for the next generation and ties into the waterfront redevelopment occurring in the downtown Coxsackie area," unquote. Construction is scheduled to begin September 7th. And be completed by spring 2022. The site will be closed to the public during construction. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com.
Bethany Bump reports in the Times Union that the COVID-19 outbreak in Albany County is so bad now that on September 3rd, officials held their first COVID-19 briefing since June. Albany County Executive Dan McCoy and Health Commissioner Dr. Elizabeth Whalen used to hold daily briefings about the local reaction to the pandemic, and they were back on the mic to warn about spread among young people. Whalen said, comparing the variant that hit the U.S. last fall with Delta, and I quote, "younger individuals with the Alpha variant we know had a level of comfort that if they got sick, they weren't going to get that sick. That comfort level is not there anymore," end quote. 8 Albany County residents died from COVID-19 this week. 1 was in their 30s, 2 were in their 40s, 2 were in their 50s, 2 were in their 60s, and 1 was in their 70s. The majority of those ending up in the hospital dying from COVID-19 now are unvaccinated, Whalen said. She urged everyone to wear masks, especially now that school is restarting. She said, and I quote, "Please, we know that these masks are going to be mandated for children. They will take their cue from you. If they feel their parents are very angry and very upset, this filters down to the children, and it's not helpful. It's a mandate at this point, and so to help your children get through this, any positive reinforcement that you give will be more helpful than to see the stress," end quote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Melanie Lukosovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that a capital project upgrades and COVID regulations continue in the Caro-Durham schools as the first day of the new school year approaches. The district held an online meeting with middle school principal Dalton Shipps and high school principal Jeremy Moore last week to review some of the changes concerning the ongoing construction project and health protocols as the COVID-19 pandemic continues. A similar remote meeting was also held for families with children in the elementary school in advance of the September 7th first day of school. Much of the summer was focused on the $28.9 million capital project at the elementary and middle high schools, which includes the addition of air conditioning, upgrades to the parking lots at both campuses, reconfigured spaces, security enhancements, classroom renovations, and more. Significant change at the middle high school campus will be the new traffic pattern in the parking lot. The new traffic flow will affect how parents drop off and pick up their children. Quote, "Parent drop-off, busing, and the main parking lot have been separated, and the traffic patterns are very different," unquote, Moore said. Staff will be stationed in the parking lot to help drivers with the new routes. School buses will have their own loop and will be separated from other traffic routes. There will be changes with regard to health protocols as well, with a full return to in-person instruction this year. Quote, "We are incredibly excited that 100% of our students will join us every single day. There is no more red and blue team. There are no A, B, and C groups," unquote, Shipp said, referring to the hybrid schedule students followed last year. Each student will undergo regular scheduled assessments to determine their academic progress and to see if any learning loss occurred during the pandemic. Elective courses like band and chorus will resume this year, including group and individual lessons. Physical distancing requirements for music classes and performances, as well as gym activities, have been reduced from 12 feet to 6 feet, while in the classroom, the requirement has been reduced from 6 feet to 3 feet. Face masks will be required for everyone on school grounds and on buses. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Ray Whalen reports for Spectrum that two state assembly members have tested positive for COVID-19. Democrats Charles Ball and Inez Dickens, both vaccinated, are currently quarantining. Assembly Speaker Carl Hastie said, and I quote, "I send Charles and Inez well wishes and hope they have a full and speedy recovery. This is a terrible reminder that we are not yet out of the woods of this pandemic," end quote. He added, and I quote, "I encourage everyone to stay vigilant and careful to protect yourself and those around you," end quote. The state legislature held a special session on September 1st, so more COVID-19 announcements could be forthcoming. One source who is waiting on his own test results after the special session said, and I quote, "The extraordinary session may have turned into an extraordinary super spreader event," end quote. Read more about this story at Spectrum.
Amelia Munson reports in the Times Union about how new census data that shows part of the local housing crisis. Greene and Schoharie counties were among 21 in New York that saw a decline in their numbers of housing units from 2010 to 2020, according to new U.S. Census data released in August. In Columbia County, housing units only grew by 1.38% in the past decade. The census data is largely from before the pandemic began, and since then the region has been inundated with folks buying property and raising prices. That's on top of many housing units being turned into short-term rentals in the past few years, with not enough hotel rooms fueling all these trends and pricing out long-term residents. Schoharie County had the third largest percent decrease of any county in New York, losing 5% of housing units. Former Governor Andrew Cuomo estimated 600 New York homes were damaged or destroyed during the storm surrounding Hurricane Irene in 2011, many in Greene and Schoharie counties. Quote, "The decline in housing stock noted in the 2020 census, and particularly affordable housing, is a byproduct of the lack of economic opportunities in rural upstate New York," unquote, said Michael Borges, executive director of the Rural Housing Coalition of New York. Quote, "Condemned or foreclosed housing is due to lack of economic opportunities for their owners and the flight of residents to areas where there are better opportunities," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Noah Zweifel reports for the Altamont Enterprise that opportunities of renewable solar energy often cite many what-ifs, including the chance of fire, when arguing against local arrays. Now they can discuss one local solar project that has caught fire twice this year. The Shepherd Farm solar fields in Westerloo caught fire August 30th after a control box short-circuited. Westerloo Volunteer Fire Department Assistant Chief Don Filkins said, and I quote, "Something had shorted inside the box and it caught fire and the fire burned through the box," end quote. A different control box combusted in a similar manner in the spring. Filkins said, and I quote, "The same issue happened, but that one didn't get quite as burned. It's kind of a recurring issue now. But on a good note, we're getting a lot of training on solar power and energy, so that's great," end quote. No one was hurt, and there was little damage from either fire. A public relations representative for the owners, Borrego, told the Enterprise they would answer questions about the incident, but they did not answer questions before the reporter's deadline. Read more about this story in the Altamont Enterprise.
And today, September 6th, is a legal holiday, Labor Day, and the Daily Freeman has a rundown of how various offices and services will be affected. All federal offices are closed. Amtrak is running on a holiday schedule, but in the Hudson Valley, service remains suspended on some lines following flash floods in the New York metro area last week. Go to Amtrak.com to check on your line. The banks are closed on Monday. County offices are also closed. Federal offices are closed, too, as are the financial markets. Greene County Transit has no service on Labor Day, and there is no mail delivery also. Crews continue to work around the clock on Metro North, bringing limited service back to the Hudson Line by September 7th. The Hudson Line remains suspended as significant repairs are being made to infrastructure following heavy rainfall last week. You can check Metro North for more details. Schools are also closed or haven't opened yet, and state offices are closed, and Trailways buses are on a holiday schedule for Labor Day.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
National Weather Service in Albany predicts a 30% chance of rain on Labor Day, mainly between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Otherwise, it'll be mostly sunny with a high of 72 and a low around 53. Tuesday should be sunny with a high of 71 and a low around 58. And then Wednesday, there's a 50% chance of showers, possibly thunderstorms after 2 p.m. with sunny skies in the forecast, a high near 76 and a low around 61. You're listening to the radio, WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, radio for open ears. You've tuned in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air on Monday, September 6th at WGXC 90.7 FM, including at 10 a.m. It's time to jump on the Afrosonic Taxi with Dobet Ganora, Salif Kida, and Mulada Askadi. At 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. He's featuring the sounds of recently departed Lee Scratch Perry today. At noon, after the local news, it's time for Deep Threes with Lynn Manning, Enrico Rava, Carter Burwell among the featured artists today. At 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly show features brand new music from around the world, including tracks today from Eduardo Camisa, Derek Poitra, and Luisa Goncalves. At 4 p.m., it's a Labor Day version of the WGXC Afternoon Show with Kieran Riley live from Housatonic in Western Massachusetts. And then tonight at 10 p.m., it's the debut episode of Radiant Point, a new show from Palinville residents Nick and Lisa, who described the show as no borders, no walls, just 2 hours of the most entrancing and compelling new music from all genres and all regions. Tune in tonight at 10 live from Acre for the debut of Radiant Point on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
Tune in or turn out Saturday, October 23rd to John Cage's Rozart Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway at Bard College in Annandale-on-Hudson. The performance will be at the John Cage Trust from noon to sunset with collaborating tape players including Twig Harper from Nautical Almanac, Rosie Actor Engel, John Weiss, Mike Colino, and C. Lavender. John Cage's Rozart Mix was composed in 1965 for a performance at Brandeis University's Rose Art Gallery. The score is correspondence between John Cage and Alvin Lussier concerning preparations for the concert utilizing tape loops. Aaron Dillaway, who's known for his work in Wolf Eyes and many other collaborations, was a former Wave Farm resident who worked with tape loops and cart machines in his residency in Acre. You can find out more about the Saturday, October 23rd performance of John Cage's Rozart Mix, realized by artist Aaron Dillaway, in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
I'd say, do you say, I do, I'd say.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to move my mic around to hear parts of the engine. Where I'm about to put the mic is where all the valves are. It's noisy. It sounds like a sewing machine.
This is tongue and cheek. Exercises for warming up our ways of communicating. First Tuesdays of every month, 2 to 3 p.m. on WGXC Waveform Radio.
Now move to 12. and try to get that same.
Tongue in Cheek is voiced and led by Tim Simmons, Aaron Lehman, and Emma McCormick Goodhart.
Shell with the top cut off of the spire.
Hello and welcome to the Better Weather for Monday, September 6th. 68.2% of the way through the year, 16 days left until fall. That is right, everybody. It is not that far away. We are going to be a little hot today as temperatures rise from 62 early this morning to 80 by 4 p.m. A bit of patchy and potentially time-delaying fog early on, but no other moisture is expected today. Sun will be out. Don't forget sunscreen and or sunglasses. A stiff breeze this afternoon should help out with that sun and warmth. Overnight temperatures fall to the mid-50s before heading into another dry day tomorrow. A high of 77 is expected at 3 p.m. Wednesday, rain returns with a high of 82. Thursday, some of that rain lingers and we get a high of only 75. Pollen levels for today will be pretty low. Only grasses are left for the year, and if levels follow this trend, this metric will be dropped as we head into the fall. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 2:54 a.m., low tide at 9:48 a.m., high tide again at 3:29 p.m., and low tide again at 9:52 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees. Sunset today will be at 7:09 p.m., and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:22 a.m. Looking way up, we see a minor solar wind stream is expected to arrive at Earth today. No geomagnetic storms are expected. Solar wind speed is currently 320 kilometers per second at 8.6 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently poor. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3. Quiet. The current sunspot number is 66. And this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Maker Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Kirby Crone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
Ladies and gentlemen, and then I just, there's good news. Good evening.
Chasing
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with WGXC's fall election preview. The adage that every election is the most important election is truer than ever this year, as voting rights are under attack and democracy in the United States appears in danger. Republicans across the country are attempting to roll back early voting hours, make it more difficult to register to vote, and are even passing laws against handing out water to those waiting at a polling station. Locally, the Republican efforts to stymie turnout have been successful in Rensselaer County, where in June a state Supreme Court justice threw out the county's early voting plan. The court ruled that the locations the board picked were not near mass transit and disenfranchised minority voters. The county appealed the ruling and kept its polling locations in place for the primary election. But recently, the appeals court ordered the county to pick another location for early voting in Troy. In early September, the Rensselaer County Board of Elections added the Troy Atrium as the city's early voting site for fall elections in October 23rd through 31st. With Republicans the minority party in New York, they are also complaining about unfair treatment and election shenanigans. In November, state voters will consider changes to New York's redistricting process that would cap the number of members in the state Senate at 63 members, and also have prisoners counted at their home address rather than at the location of the facility where they are incarcerated. Former local congressional representative John Faso, a Republican, is concerned about the redistricting measure on the ballot. Quote, "They take a carefully constructed bipartisan measure that was adopted by the people, and they would tilt it so that basically it would remove the ability of the minority party, in this case the Republicans, to really have a true input into the redistricting process. That's not what the people voted for back in 2014, unquote, Faso tells Spectrum News. There are several major local campaigns for the November 2nd elections. In terms of the amount of political signs along local streets, no race comes close to Columbia County Sheriff election. Incumbent Republican David Bartlett is being challenged by Dan Krampf, a 23-year veteran of the sheriff's office, who recently dropped his registration as a Republican to take on Bartlett. The incumbent has been broiled in controversy since last summer, when a party at the home of one of his deputies in Kinderhook ended with a local man being beaten almost to death. The ensuing investigation was first handled by others in the sheriff's office, with an obvious conflict of interest, before being turned over to the state police. More than a year later, no trial date has yet been set for those who stand accused of the alleged assault of Harold J. Handy III. The case has resulted in rallies, a countywide campaign for justice on Handy's behalf, and a host of comments on social media. In Greene County, Cairo has the most contested elections, as most Republicans are not running for re-election this year in the GOP-led town. Current Cairo Supervisor Dan Benoit and Council Members Dan Joyce and Gary Warner and Superintendent of Highways Robert Hempstead are all not running for re-election. Longtime Greene County legislator William Lawrence, who also represents Cairo, is stepping down. Three Republicans faced off to replace him in a June primary, with Michael J. Camendine, backed by the Cairo Establishment Republicans, winning with 183 votes, or 42.46%. Sherry B. True finished second with 155 votes, or 35.96%. Current Cairo Town Supervisor John M. Coyne was third with 85 votes, or 19.72%. In Hudson, Democratic primary largely decides the winners, but for 5th Ward alderperson, Vicky Daskaludi with 73 votes and Dominic Moranti with 51 votes won the primary, though Rebecca Borer was just one vote short at 50. Borer is on the working families line in the general election, so she still has a chance. And there are other Greene County legislator elections that may be contested this fall. As always, WGXC takes any volunteer programmers running for election off the air during election season. That means Neva Wartell, who hosts the Music for the Masses show, won't be back on the air until November, after her run for Greene County Legislature. Kamal Johnson, Hudson's mayor, and Tom DiPietro, Hudson's Common Council president, are released from co-hosting the WGXC afternoon show on Wednesdays and Thursdays, respectively, until after November 2nd. Perhaps the largest looming election issue locally is how the 19th congressional district will be redrawn. New York is losing congressional districts, and the resigning Republican Tom Reed's district in western New York is thought to be one of the districts that will permanently be taken away. That could split the current district, with Antonio Delgado keeping the area east of the Hudson River and a different seat emerging on the western bank. You can read more about local elections in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We are still trying to pull out from the depths of the very deep pandemic-driven recession.
Labor Day 2021 comes after a grim August jobs report showing a significant slowdown in hiring, nearly 500,000 fewer jobs than expected. Elise Gold with the Economic Policy Institute also notes almost 8.5 million Americans are currently out of work, not even considering those who have dropped out of the labor force or are working less than they want.
Put all this together, we're talking about almost 19 million workers that are being hurt right now.
In all, employment is down by about 5.5 million compared to the start of the pandemic. And many of those who are working still face the risk of getting COVID-19 on the job, and some struggle with telecommuting or virtual learning. Adding to those challenges, federal emergency unemployment programs expired today, including the $300 a week in supplemental federal benefits offered in half the states. Conservatives argue those programs compound a labor shortage because people prefer living off benefits instead of finding work. Republican Senator Rob Portman from Ohio.
And if you go down your main street, wherever you live, you'll see the help wanted signs up. If you go by your restaurants, you will see, instead of the marquee saying, come and check out our great apple pie or our hamburgers, they say, we're paying signing bonuses, $500, $250.
Others counter that higher wages are succeeding in bringing in applicants, and unemployment assistance helps people take the time to find better jobs that match their skills. Meanwhile, for those who are working, inequalities persist. President of the AFL-CIO, Liz Schuller, says over the last four decades, productivity has grown 3.5 times as fast as pay for the typical worker.
Workers are still getting the raw deal. The jobs in America have been consistently downgraded. It's a race to the bottom.
At the biggest corporations, average CEO pay rose nearly 20% last year compared to less than 4% for the typical worker. The stock markets are in or near record territory. Tom Perez, labor secretary under President Barack Obama, calls income inequality a defining issue of our time.
There's no one magic bullet to address income inequality, but making sure that we can address the right to form a union, that we can grow the union movement, that is a key.
Perez says the Protecting the Right to Organize Act passed by the House would expand collective bargaining rights for workers and reform labor law.
I think that this PRO Act is going to help us to expand union density. And when we expand union density, we expand the middle class. And that's what it's all about, helping people get in and stay in the middle class.
A new Gallup poll finds more than 2/3 of Americans approve of labor unions, the highest rate since 1965. For Pacifica Network and Public News Service, I'm Mary Sherman. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to The Morning Show on WGXC 90.7 FM.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
Well, we're lucky enough to be joined right now by Corinne Carey. She's here to discuss the upcoming series interviewing candidates in Rensselaer County for this November election and what we're trying to do with this project. She's going to be talking to us about it. Hello and welcome, Corinne.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell me, what are we going to be doing with this series? It sounds very interesting.
Well, we're going to be doing a series of candidate profile interviews with hopefully all 38 of the Troy-based candidates for local office. We've got 5 different offices that we're looking at, 38 candidates, and 5 different parties. It's quite an endeavor, and we're going to start with an overview that I did with a current sitting city council person, Anasha Cummings, that I think will air tomorrow, that kind of does an overview of what's at stake in Troy, what do all these political parties mean. Part 2 with him will air, and then we'll hopefully get right into the candidate interviews.
You said there were 5 offices. I'm thinking county legislature, city council, county clerk, county executive. Which one am I missing?
The family court judge.
Family court judge. And we don't want to totally give away what you're going to talk to Nash about, but was there anything that he talked to you about that surprised you or you hadn't known about previously?
Well, I think I've been really interested in trying to figure out the layout of all the people running on different lines. So I mentioned we had 5 parties. And I think that for an average voter that goes into the voting booth, even if they may have learned this somewhere along the line, it's really difficult to understand why you can see one candidate on 3 different lines and what that means and where should you mark the ballot? So Anasha and I talked a little bit about what those parties are and some of the party shenanigans that have gone on this year, frankly. So really interesting interview. I hope people tune in to hear that.
So what kind of questions will you be asking these candidates? Will you be looking into their history or their political and social history or issues that they're most focused on?
Yeah, so the way that I usually do these interviews, and I've been doing interviews with local candidates for the past 3 years, is it's really a candidate profile. What I find frustrating is that most people, when they go into the voting booth, if they've seen the names before, it may have been in passing on a flyer, they really don't know who these people are at all. So what I try to do is come up with a series of 5 to 6 questions that I'll ask every single candidate. Why are you running, for example? I ask them about some of the bigger issues that people in that office will have to face. I ask them what in their experience qualifies them for this position. Sometimes I ask them what challenges they've faced, either in the position if they're an incumbent or in a previous position that they might have held. And then I ask them what they do. This is my favorite question. I ask them what they do when they're not out on the campaign trail. What do they do for fun? What do they do for distraction? And I have to say, I learned a lot during the primary when I was asking some of the candidates what they do for fun. And I realized what a lighthearted question that is for people that aren't feeling very lighthearted right now. So a couple of the candidates said, you know, there's not a whole lot of fun to be had right now, and told me what they were working on. And that was a real, it's kind of a more of a wake up call for me to ask the question a little bit differently.
You mentioned earlier the shenanigans that go on, particularly in Troy among the political parties. And clearly one of the big issues this year was after Cindy Doran and Peter Grimm, who are the minority leaders of the county legislature, supported a resolution in support of the Black Lives Matters movement, it seemed like the party Democrats and Troy sort of bounced them and big primary fights, both in the Democratic Party and the Working Families Party. And now it seems like the older, more conservative part have created this new party called the Troy Strong Party. How can voters figure all this out? I mean, even us who follow this find it mystifying. And are you going to be able to ask the candidates to explain what's going on with all that?
Oh, you better believe it. I'm definitely going to ask the candidates what's going on. I've been trying to get more information from folks who've been involved in local politics for a long time. But the answer, Mark, is that I don't really know what's going on with the Troy Strong Party. I mean, any group of candidates or any candidate can go out and get enough signatures to get on the ballot line for these local elections, a new ballot line. And everybody, you know, look, for the longest time, Republicans and conservatives, Republicans would run on both the Republican Party line and the Conservative Party line. So when you look at the ballot, one person could be listed on these two lines. And I think the Democrats are looking at trying to get more ballot lines, frankly. We have what's called fusion voting here in New York, and Inasha explains that really well in the interview that'll air hopefully tomorrow. But, you know, I think the goal is to get on as many party lines as you can. I mean, ideally, you'd want to be on the Democratic Party line, the Working Families Party line, and the Troy Strong Party. But it's kind of unclear to me what this Troy Strong Party is. I mean, you made one implication that, you know, two of the lawmakers who voted for a resolution in support of Black Lives Matter at the county legislative level are not in the Troy Strong Party, sorry. And then there are a couple of city council candidates that are running on the Troy Strong Party. And I think at this point, until we get some answers, it's left to voter speculation to try to figure out how these people line up in the different parties. What does the Troy Strong Party stand for? I've put that question to folks in the Troy Strong Party, and I hope to get an answer for our listeners.
To get back to the Troy Strong Party, as you may remember, a couple of years ago, 6 years ago, Democrats split, some ended up in the Working Families Party line, some in the Democratic Party line, and ended up with the Republicans winning control for a while, the Troy City Council. In this case, the county legislature, where you run in Troy at large, so you pick the top six, you now basically have nine Democrats, six Republicans, which means that the odds that the Republicans will carry some seats dramatically increase. And right now it's been 13 Republicans in the county legislature, six Democrats. Seems like the Democrats are shooting themselves in the foot with this Troy Strong Party, which is basically the old guard Democrats, it seems like.
Well, it's an interesting question, Mark, and you can kind of look at how people line up and speculate as to why that is. I mean, why would certain party members rather see Republicans in control than some of the other factions? I think that that's one question that we can ask. We can ask the candidates that, and voters should be asking people who come to the door and ask for their vote. You know, why is this? The other thing that's really interesting is you've got four of the Republican candidates for the Rensselaer County Legislature are running on the Republican line, the Conservative Party line, and the Working Families Party line. Explain that one to me. I mean, talk about party shenanigans. This is the values of the Working Families Party and the Conservative Party could not be more different. So how is it, and I'll certainly be asking the candidates this, how is it that you can run on all three of those party lines at the same time and profess to espouse those values? I don't know if these are folks that are just truly bipartisan and they really do embrace all of these values, or is it that they're trying to get votes out of people who might vote a straight Working Families Party ticket. And frankly, Mark, that's something that many progressive people who have been told for years, vote a straight party ticket on the Working Families Party line, and you're going to be doing justice to your values. That's not true this year. If you vote the straight Working Families Party line, you're not going to be getting the candidates that you may not be getting the candidates that espouse those values.
Well, I think, Corinne, what you're doing is fantastic. And I think that not many stations cover this kind of information, and it'd be wonderful. One other question I had quickly is, you vote for the party line rather than for the individual.
Yeah, what it means to vote a straight party line is you just go right down the ballot and click every Working Families Party.
Yeah. But I mean, if you've got four different levels that you're running on, and all four of them, you know, do they gather them all up and that individual wins?
Yeah, the individual with the most votes in all of those categories wins. That's what fusion voting is all about. And you can learn more about that during the interview with Anasha.
I can't wait to hear it. Thank you. I think what you're doing is brilliant. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about it. And I hope folks are as excited to listen to these interviews as I am to do them.
Between now and Election Day, Corinne Carey will be reporting on those 38 races involving the city of Troy. And we will also be sneaking in a few races from elsewhere in the Capital District.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Last week, the New York State Legislature came back into session to pass an extension of the eviction moratorium through January. The eviction moratorium passed easily through the state assembly and state senate that's controlled by Democrats. But locally, Democrat Dee Dee Barrett, who represents Columbia and Dutchess counties, and Republican Chris Tague, who represents Greene and Schoharie counties, both voted against extending the eviction moratorium. The Hudson-Catskill Housing Coalition had previously demonstrated in front of Barrett's Hudson office against her position on the eviction moratorium. You have tuned into the WGXC local news update. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra. Melanie Lakosovic is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Greene County lawmakers September 1st learned from health officials that the county is among the hardest hit statewide by the opioid epidemic. Jason Fredenberg, County Director of Community Services and Mental Health, and Laura Churchill, Deputy Director of Greene County Public Health, presented the county's response to the health crisis to the full legislature. Quote, "Unfortunately, Greene County is not doing well with regard to the opioid epidemic," unquote, Friedenberg said. The county was among those hardest hit in the state by the, quote, "opioid burden," unquote, which considers overdose deaths, non-fatal emergency room visits, and opioid abuse and dependence, according to a 2018 data from the State Department of Health. A recent study found that Greene County's opioid burden was 33% higher than the rest of the capital region and 45% higher than the state as a whole. Fredenberg said the number of overdose fatalities in the county has been on the rise in recent years. Quote, "In 2019, there were 9. In 2020, there were 14. And in 2021, as of July 31st, we were already up to 11, so that number is increasing each year," unquote, he said. The number of overdoses, fatal and non-fatal, has also been rising. Quote, "Many people in our community here in Greene County are being affected, and their addictions may have started or been escalated by prescription drugs," unquote, Fredenberg said. Quote, "There is a very high incidence of prescribing dangerous prescription drugs in Greene County," unquote. He said the county is addressing the addiction problem in a variety of ways, with prevention a key action area. Quote, "We don't have a recovery outreach center in Greene County," unquote, Churchill said. Quote, "Stigma, when people feel that they're being judged, they will not seek services, and that's a huge, huge barrier in this county," unquote. The county does not have a detox facility or methadone treatment program. Quote, "We don't even have pain management, so somebody with legitimate pain who needs narcotics, we don't have that service in Greene County, so people sometimes use illicit substances when they are in pain," unquote, Churchill said. She urged the legislators to help destigmatize drug addiction and view it as a chronic disease. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Andrea Macko is reporting for Porcupine Soup that residents of Cornwallville turned out to the Durham Town Board meeting last week to express their opposition to the proposed Bosque development project. The meeting was moved to the town highway garage to accommodate the crowd. It was held for the purpose of completing the state environmental assessment form review of the proposed subdivision. BOSC first submitted its plan to the town in November 2020 to subdivide 95 acres that border Strong Road and Cornwallville Road. The project includes the construction of 12 high-end homes and a farming operation. In Durham, the town board serves as the planning board and are therefore charged with following the Seeker Act. As the board began the assessment, considering the numerous questions on the Seeker form, it determined that some aspects of the project had little or no environmental impact. At that point, the crowd became agitated, but town attorney Tal Rapplier pointed out nothing would be finalized that night. Town supervisor Sean Marriott emphasized that public hearings will be scheduled before any final determination on the project is made. Multiple audience members talked over one another, and Marriott reminded residents that the town is, quote, following the process, unquote, that the state has put forth for us. He told the crowd that nothing was being accomplished by arguing. Quote, we cannot act like this, unquote, Marriott said. Quote, this is getting us absolutely nowhere. We will work through this together, but we can't treat or talk to each other like this, unquote. Since the project was first presented, public comment has been largely in opposition of the development. Dozens of no subdivision lawn signs are posted throughout the town. Concerns from community members range from environmental and traffic impact to the effect the development will have on the historic character of the hamlet. The Seeker review was not completed during the four-hour-long meeting. It will continue on September 7th. Read more about this story at porcupinesoup.com. Jeanette Wolfberg is reporting for the Columbia paper that the Hudson Board of Education is making plans to raise the pay rate for substitute teachers, aides, and staff for the first time in 5 years. Substitutes are hard to find, and Hudson must compete with other districts that may pay substitutes a higher rate, District Human Resources Manager Rachel Rizzetto told the board at its August 16th meeting. Rizzetto said the substitute list is already, quote, not long, unquote, and gets shorter whenever someone leaves the list to take a permanent position, such as a teacher's aide. And the district needs substitutes in all areas, she said. Board member Mark DePace asked about proactive steps to recruit substitutes, and Rizzetto replied that the district had recruited at libraries, job fairs, and Columbia Green Community College, especially pre-COVID. Board member Stella Graham compared the proposed hourly pay for some substitutes with that for permanent employees in the same position. Rizzetto said that she and business administrator Jesse Boehm would calculate the hourly wage for full-time employees if benefits were included in the pay, particularly with teachers, aid, and food service. As for the district reopening this month, conditions will be closer to pre-COVID normal than last year. Students will attend in-person instruction 5 days a week. There will be no daily temperature checks or Wednesday closings for deep cleaning. Students with symptoms will have to stay home, but other people who live with them will no longer be automatically quarantined. Buses will run at full capacity. The physical distancing requirement in school buildings is reduced from 6 to 3 feet, with the exception of gym and music classes, where it will remain at 6 feet. Masks are mandatory on buses and inside school buildings. Staff and visitors must wear masks indoors as well. Note, Graham is an active WGXC volunteer on-air programmer. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at WGXC.org. You've tuned in to all sorts of creative community voices on the air on Monday, September 6th at WGXC 90.7 FM. Including at 10 a.m., it's time to jump on the Afrosonic Taxi with Dobet Ganora, Salif Kida, and Mulada Askadi. At 11 a.m., Brendan Donegan is playing favorites live from the WGXC Hudson studio in the basement of the First Presbyterian Church on Warren Street. He's featuring the sounds of recently departed Lee Scratch Perry today. At noon, after the local news, it's time for Deep Threes with Lynn Manning, Enrico Rava, Carter Burwell among the featured artists today. At 2 p.m., the Vital Weekly Show features brand new music from around the world, including tracks today from Eduardo Camisa, Derek Poitra, and Luisa Goncalves. At 4 p.m., it's a Labor Day version of the WGXC Afternoon Show with Kieran Riley live from Housatonic in Western Massachusetts. And then tonight at 10 p.m., it's the debut episode of Radiant Point, a new show from Palinville residents Nick and Lisa, who described the show as no borders, no walls, just 2 hours of the most entrancing and compelling new music from all genres and all regions. Tune in tonight at 10 live from Acre for the debut of Radiant Point on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. Thank you.
somebody. You don't know a way that you can find yourself some peace of mind. You don't know a way that you can find yourself some peace of mind. You don't know a way that you can find yourself some peace of mind.
There are all sorts of things to do in the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org, where citizens from all over the area post their events with all sorts of lectures, performances, town hall meetings, and more in the WGXC community calendar, including some of these events. On Tuesday, September 7th, the Columbia County Human Services Building hosts the Columbia County Health Department's vaccine clinic. That's every Tuesday from 1 to 3:30 p.m. at 325 Columbia Street in Hudson. On Thursday, September 9th, Miss Gulch returns to the Bridge Street Theater for a show that runs this weekend and next. Skip Shurey is performing at the White Feather Farm in Saugerties in the Broken Wing Barn. You can go to whitefeatherfarm.org for more information about that event on Thursday, September 9th. Friday, September 10th, Eric Boodman and Jan Falkett perform at the